you know.
After Genesis, we have an account. First of all, we have to realize that all of these stories, myth is a high truth. And there is a truth, and as Bultmann says, we demythologize it, and somewhere encoded, as Bill Jenkins would say, there
is
the truth. You see, there's the story, and as we did with the archaeolinguistics, we get then to the core of the root of the matter. Mm-hmm. And so we have this story that is recorded, that has been told by, must remember, first of all, Bedouins, nomadic peoples, that there was a tree. And that this tree contained great knowledge, great wisdom, and great good, and then great evil, mm-hmm. and death and destruction. And then we have the story of the Melchizedek, who was Lucifer, who was put in charge of this experiment. Mm-hmm. And then we have also, here comes the Caduceus here, we have the serpent that enters in, mm-hmm. which we have in our Kundalini, but there, and we have on, it's a symbol of medicine. We have all of these that come together. Now, what does this mean? Are we really talking about a snake and a serpent who talked to a woman mm-hmm. who tempted her and said, come and eat the apple? She ate the apple, and she gave it to the man, and the Lord God came, and he said, what happened? He said, well, the woman gave me the apple, and then he says, now you're going to crawl on your belly, and you're going to suffer, and...
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What really happened?
What really happened is that we're talking about the symbol of the DNA, the tree, was a mix. They were intended, they were like moral imbeciles. They were not ready for this.
Little children.
Little children.
Physical beings.
Yes.
But without any great mental capacity yet, other than
exactly
the normal processes of life that were necessary.
Yes. It was a mix. And in etymology, you don't even get the word snake for serpent. You get enchanter. Prognosticator, you get a copper, like, it says copper.
Con man.
No, but it's not, they're not talking about a surface, a snake. And we're talking about Lucifer,
right,
who spoke through the, mechanical device,
mm-hmm.
which was the DNA mix that came out of that, and he spoke through that. Now, the etymology, the roots, bring it
all there. And so, actually, what he did do then was talk Eve into.
He said, "Ye shall not surely die." She says, "Well, the Lord says that in the day that we eat thereof, that we will be as gods." Now, I get a lot of fundamentalists on this because you say heirs of the gods. There's only one God. It says you will be as gods to know good and evil.
That's you picked that up from Paul, by the way.
Right.
Paul said we're all heirs of the gods.
Heirs of the
and
gods.
He used the term and gods.
Yes.
But what happened here was, as I recall, in Heirs of the Gods, that...
You recall very well.
That Eve was allowed to eat this DNA mix,
yes,
which allowed for the
right.
development of the cerebral cortex.
Exactly.
Which gave her then, and Adam, the power to reason and the power to think quite like the celestials themselves.
Without
all of the fundamentals to go along with it. And what we had here were smart animals. They were able to use the mentality of the human being, coupled with all of the primitive instincts of the very indigenous and primitive life form, which was very much a part of their makeup.
This is why today our technology exceeds our feelings of nurturing and loving, unless we can relate to the spirit and the biocosmic energy at a higher plane, because we also are heirs of the gods. We also are gods.
Mm-hmm.
We're angels.
That's right. That's where our beginnings come from.
Yes.
Our technology has far outdistance our spirituality. And because of that, we're about to use our technology on ourselves.
Exactly.
And we are in the midst of a technological explosion, which is quite frightening.
Yes. I think it's all predicted.
I was just going to say, I think it's very interesting that you mentioned the whole question about dying and about mortality, because I think one of the great differences between gods and people is that gods did not have any problem with leaving their bodies, but people do.
Yes.
And it's also interesting that you talked about copper, because there is another understanding connected with the tree of life, which says that once the period of the copper age comes, that is the time when people cease to be gods and start to be mortals, and that is the time when the great thought that we can call philosophy and religion begins. And so that, I mean, all these different traditions are validating and verifying each other, and we are at a point when we're going to be able to reacquire that ability not to be afraid of death, so that we are going to be unafraid of the threats to our existence, and we'll then be able to transcend the kinds of limitations that have created blindness, so that people can't really connect between what they have been used to thinking and the new material that's coming in. So I think it's a very exciting moment.
It is. Yes, indeed it is.
We're at a fun time, and I guess we're all here for a reason. I have a reason for being here, and I want to attend to that, and we'll be right. Well, how's our signal coming in up there, Craig?
Pretty good for the most part, although as you'll...
We should put optophonics on it, then you can hear it bright and clear.
I did miss one important part, which I'll get into shortly. Before I even get to the questions for your guests, I don't want to take very much time at all on this, but I did come across a report in the July 11th issue of Science Magazine. There was a very brief article saying that the National Bureau of Standards had issued a report on the testing it had done on Joe Newman's energy machine.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with the report that they issued?
I'm very familiar with the report. And
are
the
you
whole
going to do that in a future program?
Yeah, we'll have Joe Newman on again, and I really wouldn't call that too much of a testing job they did. That whole scenario that involved Joe Newman up there is somewhat of a joke.
Okay, well, as long as you're going to get into it at some point.
Yes.
Good enough. I don't want to distract from the program for a minute. See, first of all, since you're not going to be talking about the meditation for peace until later, just one brief question. Did you say that there was a date in October that you're aiming for?
The end date is October 16th, and the minutes can be donated between September 16th and October 16th. And
so there's a whole month in there.
A whole month, yes.
Oh, I see, a whole month. I thought you had selected a specific date, and I was curious. Just considering the fact that August 6th, which will be
right
shortly, is already recognized by many people around the world as Peace Day.
I think it's October, isn't it? August 3rd.
Well, August 6th is the anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima.
Right. There's quite a few particular days. September 16th we had selected because it's the time when the General Assembly of the United Nations begins its meeting for the fall. And so that's also being called a Peace Day. But all these minutes can be donated, you know, pledged from any time.
Okay. Well, let me get to...
Well, Craig, you know the power of thought. I know that.
Well, yes. No question about it.
You know, that's in the virtual state that it goes to work. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to get to some questions for Vivian. It's been a while since you've been on.
Yes, it has. Too long.
And I'm curious, in the interim, well, let me figure out how to put this. I guess it would be a little naive to expect anyone from the establishment academic community to embrace your conclusions or to have done so in that period. So I won't even ask that, although if there is anybody that has done so.
Oh, yes, we've had many people from the academic world. I would say not as many early on, but in the last few years, it's almost taken a quantum leap because of the information. It's an awesome age in which we live, you know. And they are quietly embracing many of the ideas that we've put forth, our paradigm. So it's not as sketchy, Craig, as it was some years ago.
And as you know, Craig, I'm as establishment as you can get. And I endorse it.
Well,
we're establishment ourselves. Just happen to be futurologists because that's how the energy came into our being.
Well, to be more specific, I still would tend to assume that you're not finding many people who are willing to embrace them with a more sweeping or...
Oh, generally, yes. Yes.
Okay. But I was going to start by asking, are there people who have validated the discipline which you refer to as archaeolinguistics in itself, without reference to the information which you derive from it?
Yes. We've kept that, except for the private meetings that we've had with some of the people in the field of linguistics, we've kept it pretty quiet until we do the second book. That's a choice that we've had to make because we've got some vital information that that we will be putting forth in. Actually, we have a scholastic paper that we did, and we've been in touch with, as I say, some of the leading linguistic pedagogy of our day, but we're hesitating because the thing is that we really have kept it under wraps. Bill knows that.
They have a new book coming out, and
yes,
I'm not going to tell them about it. I have been bugging them for 2 years about what's in the new book.
No, but,
and I told them they can trust me. I won't do anything but tell other than a million people.
Oh, please, thank you. When we come back with it, yes. We're very much engaged in another book.
Well, without specifically discussing in our book that's in progress, you did have a body of work.
Oh, yes.
Which you presented in your original book. And,
yes.
It was based on...
Have you read our book?
No, I haven't. Many of the several hours of discussion.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've probably heard every program that you've been on with Bill.
I'd love for you to read it.
I hope to get around to it.
Yes.
Sorry, I won't give you any...
I'm not going to give you mine because I've got it locked in.
Yes.
But what I'm asking is... the academic discipline or tool that you use as archaeolinguistics, and I'm wondering if the methodology itself has been validated by other competent people in the field of linguistics.
Yes, it has. However, we've not had any national involvement again because, you see, we're in a... We can't let it sit on the shelf and gather cobwebs, but neither can we... it's like when you apply for a grant and you send your information in. You have to be a bit careful about that because you have the people reading it and you have to put an awful lot down in order to get this grant. You have to put down what the work is, and if it's truly new and innovative, the problem is if it's not traditional, you have a problem. And if it is traditional, then it's a bit better. But our work is so phenomenal and so and yet so obvious and obviously simplistic, beautifully simplistic, that if we let it out too much, we would be in danger. We'd be in harm's way. So we are keeping it under wraps, and we're really not concerned about the academic community at large, whether they are that aware of it or not, because the moment the other book comes out,
then they can look at it all at once.
Oh, we'll be delighted. Yes, you see, we're not concerned at all.
It's like applying for a patent of something in the electronic age, and you put a very innovative and far-reaching patent into the patent office. You get your patent, and the first person who reads it is Sony.
Yes.
And the next thing you know, they're manufacturing it.
And we don't really need them, excuse me, to validate the work itself. You see, this rarely a work comes along that doesn't really need any validation from the academic community, because who, it's like Bertrand Russell said to the chancellor of UCLA, this may sound rather smug, but he said, tell me, why is it that you never got your doctorate? And Bertrand Russell said, well, my dear fellow, I don't think this is an apocryphal story, my dear fellow, who would teach me? So, you see...
I understand your point. Yes. I'm not even asking... Yes. I would never necessarily expect the academic community at large to...
So what, be specific, what is your point?
Let me put it a different way.
Do.
Sort of a twofold question. What about people that you talk to and, say, informally submitted it to just for their comments, and also...
Oh, every one of them have come through. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Every one of them.
Okay.
Yes.
And are there other people in the field who are using the same methodology for their own research?
No.
Really?
Not because we have the innovation. It's ours, and no one has because it's like saying to Einstein, you know, this is new. This is very, very new, and we're going to do something exceptional with it in the new work.
They're on the leading edge there.
I understand that it takes a while, of course, for people to learn to use new techniques, but you've been developing this for, at least half a dozen or 10 years now, right?
It's already developed, yes, and we have...
And these days, new ideas do tend to get around.
This one hasn't yet.
I think the idea is that they have not let out the methodology yet,
Craig. Not the methodology yet.
Because they have an eminent book here, and after that's done... Everybody will know how to do it.
They certainly will. Be delighted.
And the whole world will be better for it.
Okay. Let me ask you one other question that's not even related to that.
Surely.
Didn't expect it for that to be so long and drawn out.
That's all right.
This is when my radio reception went out. There was some reference to an atomic explosion or exchange of some sort that allegedly...
On the Sinai Peninsula. Yes.
And I believe I heard you say there was some sort of physical evidence.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Could you elaborate on
this? Well, I will. This is the work of Zechariah Sitchin. You can find it in his book, The Wars of Gods and Men, actually, which is an excellent book for you to read. And it not only details the seven mushroom clouds that appeared in that area, but it also details the radioactive cloud that drifted to the east as it naturally would be and settled up against the Zagros Mountains.
And the pectotites. Pectotites. That's the residue that... It was let that they found. I think it's T E. They did an article on us, and they had it in the article that we had. Do you know T E?
I know what you're talking about.
T-E-C-T-E-T-I-E-S, I believe. And a Russian scholar has done some work on this. And let's see, there was quite a large article on Heirs of the Gods. Dr. Lee Gladden and myself, and they mentioned.
We mentioned that part, didn't
they? They mentioned it, yes.
The rocks in that area, the mountains in that area.
Yes, and they found the same kind of residue in Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
There is a black coating on all of those rocks.
Yes.
It extends all the way over to the Zagros Mountains. And
yes.
The area was extremely fertile and lush, according to the ancient historians who were there. And, of course, it has been desolate since that time, which dates back to 2024 BC.
And then again, of course, I have to reiterate that Heirs of the Gods is a space-age interpretation of the Bible. And if you will read the Bible and that account in Sodom and Gomorrah, it is perfectly, perfectly clear that an atomic explosion happened there. I mean, and then in Peter, it says that it talks about the earth burning with fervent heat, and even the sockets of the eyes melting out of the eyes.
Yeah,
the skin falling off, I mean.
That's definitely quite suggestive. But the question, going back to the question of currently existing, tangible physical evidence, do you happen to know who and when these measurements were done to confirm lingering radioactivity?
You can read Zechariah Sitchin covers that in great detail in his book, The Wars of Gods and Men.
And if you would read Heirs of the Gods, we deal with the explosion in Sodom and Gomorrah, and I believe you could get in the Bodhi tree if you're in the Los Angeles area.
And that was a part of that same nuclear
battle. Mm-hmm. We go into that in detail in Heirs of the Gods.
Interestingly, according to the ancient Sumerians, the target for that nuclear attack was a spaceport, which was located in the middle of the Sinai Peninsula. I'm going to have to stop right here, Craig. You want to hang on?
Sure.
Or otherwise...
If you could give me a very brief answer. Did the scientists who did the measurements of the radioactivity in the Sinai, did they themselves believe that it resulted from atomic explosions, or did they attribute it to something else?
The only thing that I have seen from them is that it is the same kind of footprint 4,000 years later that an atomic explosion would have left.
And did they suggest any other possible...
They suggested nothing. It was a puzzlement, as the
They never suggest anything. They stand on the fence a lot of the times, and
No scientist that has a grant behind him from a major university is going to say that this was a nuclear explosion.
I think it was a team of Russian scientists,
They're not going to do anything.
Well, as you know, there are some Russian scientists who believe that the Tunguska event was a extraterrestrial craft explosion.
Well, I think that's general literature in the Soviet Union.
They wouldn't necessarily be reluctant to support such a conclusion. Let me ask you one other thing, and I'll wrap up the whole call here. Have any of you looked into...
You know what, Craig? Here comes the network news. All right, quickly the question.
There's the allusions to this kind of thing in the old Vedic texts. I'm sure you know what I'm referring to.
All right, the old text of the Bible.
The Vedic.
All right, we'll touch that right after the news, Craig.
Yes.
Thank you very much for
Thank
jumping
you for your call.
Sure. The Million Minutes for Peace. It's an international appeal. It is done through the auspices of the United Nations. Let me just give you some of the people who are involved in this. Deborah Kerr, Ben Kingsley, who did that magnificent portrayal of Gandhi. Dr. Lawrence Klein, who's a Nobel laureate. Chris Christopherson, who has written some of the finest music I have ever heard in my life, and is a pretty fair actor himself. Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, we know her work is legendary already. And we can just go on and on and on. Dr. Richard Leakey, Marcel Marceau, Sean McBride, Paul McCartney. All night long, I could be reading you the list of people who say this is a very good idea and are supporting it. Tell us more about the idea, if you would, Joan.
Well, the idea started in Australia, and it has gone around the globe. There are now approximately 48 countries that are participating in this. All 170 countries have been asked, and 48 are, as far as we know, participating in this. And it is what is happening is that the international headquarters are in England, and there's also a headquarters in New York, and there's a southwestern headquarters that's in Los Angeles. And around the globe, we're asking people to give from 1 to 30 minutes in thoughts of peace, prayer, or meditation. And that would be between September 16th and October 16th. September 16th being the day that the United Nations opens. It is for the United Nations International Year of Peace.
Well, we touched on it earlier, Joan. Just to the casual listener, you sitting down and meditating for 30 minutes for world peace or thinking about it doesn't seem like a very potent weapon at all, to get anything done. You could sit down and meditate about many things if it had that kind of potency behind it. How do you think that this will help?
I think it will help immensely on a personal level, on a global level especially. The power of thought far exceeds any other kind of power that there is. It's the only thing that it's a thought away. For example, thought doesn't take any time to travel. At all.
No, it moves at infinite speed.
That's right, and there's nothing faster.
And by the way, thought is a thing. It is not something that is in the ether necessarily.
No.
It's been proven by the Jung experiments and others that thought is in the virtual state, and it exists. And it does work. By work, I mean it goes to work. around you. When you think, you create energy.
That's right.
And, of course, one of the secrets of life is to be very concerned about the quality of the energy that you are creating. Because if it's in harmony with the cosmos, mm-hmm. or harmony with the Creator, then it is amplified. And if it is in discord with it, it then is in discord. And there is a little conflict going around. You have a little electric storm around you. And in fact, out of that understanding of the power of thought comes a definition of love. Love is a thought that creates energy, which is in total harmony with the nature, character, and personality of the Creator. And I'll bet you that's the first definition of love you've ever heard that didn't just
like
tell
that.
You what a loving idea was.
One of the biggest problems as far as thought is that there are very, very few people who can sit down and spend even a minute with themselves. And losing that power of thought, you lose yourself. And you lose any sense of peace at all. I know because I've worked in addiction quite a bit. And one of the things that is happening, one of the biggest anti-thought things that is going on is addiction in every way. And this, the million minutes of peace is about trying to pull exactly what you're saying, the harmony. What will you do with peace after you get it if you don't know what it's like to be peaceful?
Evolve into a celestial being. Is that okay for an answer?
Oh, that's fine with me.
So, I certainly want to entertain questions about the processes involved in this, the reality of the power that it will actually have, and what is impressive to me, the support you're getting from the United Nations itself. Would you believe, and hallelujah and hooray, that there are some politicians on that level at the United Nations, for which I don't have a great deal of good things to say about? I don't know whether I want to go as far as my friend Bruce Hutchinson and kick him out of New York. However, I understand where he's coming from, and he probably has a good idea, but we can change that, too, with the power of thought, that they could get back to doing whatever they should do, but they are trying, and they are realizing that. I am so delighted that you and Sister Denise is here. Would you have anything? Tell us a little bit about your group.
Well, the Brahma Kumaris is one of four groups in the United States that is sponsoring the appeal. And this particular group I have been with for 13 years. So I've seen a great deal of evolution going on within the group. The thing that attracted me to it most powerfully was that when I started learning how to think straight, clear, deep thoughts, yeah, and harmonious thoughts, then my actual quality of intelligence altered, and that interested me enormously, because I have always had this tremendous desire not to be boring. And
I gave up on that a long time ago.
Well, I haven't given up on that. But what I found...
Never before.
Well, it's a preoccupation. What I found is that anything which is a bad thought actually destroys our ability to think, whereas anything which is a good thought actually enhances our ability to see with the mind's eye most clearly and most deeply. Now, for example, a bad thought can be that kind of electrical storm that results through fear.
Agreed.
Well, fear is an interesting one because a lot of people are motivated by fear. Anyone who is able to be afraid is also able to be manipulated. And so therefore is not free. Anybody who is able to think for themselves and who trains themselves to think clearly and who develops the power to discriminate and distinguish a thought that is worth thinking is in a very, very good position. Now, one of the things about thought is that it has a tendency to become reality. So if you are afraid of something, then the chances are that that thing will happen to you. And of course, fears are going in every which way, which creates a chaos in a person's life. Now, if you practice to
think really pure thoughts, think about things which are the eternal truths, the perennial truths, and about higher realities, then what you're going to be able to do through sustained thought is make that a reality. So that this particular group, the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University, examines truths and selects those truths that are the most worthwhile truths to think about. And so that the creation of a world in which people understand each other, get along with each other, recognize each other, dispense with all the games and performances that we do to lay red herrings in front of one another, that kind of a world is able to be put forth through thought. And so what Viviane was talking about earlier relates exactly to this. Because if we are going to get something from a higher realm, a higher region, that has to be also higher quality thought, and bring that in
organization that receives a set
in terms of my ability to confront those thought patterns which are designed to make life unsuccessful. And
we're carefully taught all of those, you know, from the very beginning.
Oh yes, very much taught. We don't know how to think for ourselves. We know how to memorize.
Become dangerous if you think for yourself.
That's right.
Well, we have to be able to be having a little bit of courage. And I mean, how can you have any real self-worth unless you are prepared to think for yourself? How can you develop self-esteem unless you can back up what your own choices are and take responsibility for the actions that you take and the words that you speak and the thoughts that you think?
But it's a lot easier to let somebody else think for you.
But who's interested in it being easy?
That's why
we're where we are today. That's what's happened.
That's the reason we have bureaucrats and politicians. You know, after all, these are the great minds of our time. They should be doing all of our thinking.
Well, I think things have, or the illusion has become so clear to so many people. And I mean, the work that Joan is doing in addiction absolutely points up to this. And she and I have been working together to look at what is the effect of pure thought in freeing a person from that Promethean chain that is an addiction. And according to the newspapers, 75% of young women who are giving birth to children, their children are having traces of cocaine in their blood. And that is an astounding figure, and that shows us that we are not free. We are heavily chained, and once things have reached that particular level of bondage, then you get to a point, an extreme point, where a person says, I have got to break out of this. And I think a lot of people are finding themselves back against the wall saying, I am the only one who can break myself out of this, and start looking for alternative ways of being. And so the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University is a collection of people who are thinking freely and clearly and discussing and working with each other and pulling themselves out of the limitations of religion, of philosophy, of race, of color, of culture, and working to get at those ideas which will actually free us as human beings to be able to be those higher celestial beings. And the headquarters of it is located in India. It has a lot of branches all around the world.
If somebody wanted to reach you here in the Los Angeles area, do you have a number?
They could, yeah. For the Million Minutes of Peace, the area code is 213-850-1530. Did you want to give for the Brahma Kumari?
For the Brahma Kumaris, it is 213-876-5545.
Okay, we'll give those numbers again a little later in this hour, and of course they're on file here with broadcast information at KBC.
Yes. I did want to mention that there are three other sponsors in the United States.
Okay.
They are the Child Development Foundation and the Human Unity Institute, which is located here in Los Angeles. And they're going to be doing quite a bit on the 31st of December. And the Planetary Citizens. In other countries, there's committees, but in the United States, those four.
So it is a global and worldwide effort.
Yes, oh yes.
And there were a lot of very serious-minded people that are involved in that, including our wonderful friend. I sometimes say rotten things about politicians, and I just have to exclude Councilwoman Pat Russell because she's excellent.
Yes.
And she is behind that, too. I also have sponsors. May I take a moment, and Gary?
Hello.
Yeah.
This is the first-time call and a first-time listener, so...
Well, where have you been all these years?
I have no idea. I've listened to other non-esoteric KBC programs. But
there are,
this is the first time. I'm enjoying it, and I'm slightly confused by the many topics that have been brought up in so little detail. I'm looking forward to reading the book, Heirs to the Gods. I've got
a couple
of questions about... The Minutes for Peace, but I wanted to digress briefly and ask whether or not you, Bill, or any of your guests, Dr. Gladden, have read or could comment on a book I read a long time ago called OHSPE.
OHSPE, yes. Go ahead, Lillian.
Go ahead.
I found it quite interesting. That's a channeled book. Sounds sort of biblical. I don't think you can go wrong in many of the aspects that the teaching that is there. It's basic metaphysics, actually, and I look upon that as just basic high self coming out of
high truth, as I said earlier.
High truth or high self.
Mm-hmm. I noticed a lot of responsive chords in the various things that were said this evening,
mm-hmm.
and it's been a long time since I've read that book. But the whole trend of early evolution and the non-Homo sapien type individuals that were then given a higher consciousness or spark or spirituality.
As well as frame.
Exactly.
Being.
That was just a comment. But what I'd like to find out, the phone numbers that were given, how do you actually donate minutes?
Well, there's a couple of ways you can donate minutes. We have pledge cards or donation cards that will be circulating all around. And through those cards, you can donate minutes, or you can call 850-1530, area code 213, and donate minutes that way. The cards are just coming around now.
And then you're on your honor system.
Yeah.
You do the minutes, right?
Yeah, you have to do the minutes. That's part of it.
You don't have to send any money.
No, there's no money involved in this entire
project. Send something
project.
Far more valuable.
They say time is money, don't they?
Yeah.
I've got a comment about the thoughts themselves.
Uh-huh.
I would imagine that to the degree that these thoughts are focused, that will enhance the power tremendously of what we're trying to do. And I'm wondering if you have any general guides or goals. First of all, a goal for doing this, what specifically would be visualized by the people meditating on these thoughts, and if there are any aids to that, i.e. colors, sounds, anything that comes to mind that would aid in a... And this is a sort of a neophyte talking now. Not some high discipline, but something that would help focus thoughts during that time.
Let me give a few ideas.
And
we have a song, and we also have a meditation commentary that gives you some focused thought. But you also asked about an aid, and the image that I find most useful for developing focused thought is the image that you have to create in your own mind of an infinitesimal spark point of light, which also happens to be the form of the soul in which is contained the seed of thought. And so what you'd be doing by using that image is your mind would be focused upon itself, which means that all of the energy of your mind is contained. There would be no loss of energy. You're then in a position to be able to direct your mind in that focused state on the idea that you wish to make a reality. So, for example, if we're having as this focus of meditation peace, then you have to think about it a little to yourself and determine what you mean by that.
Of course, many people you will have heard say that peace begins within, so that the first quality that you will need to evoke in the focusing of your mind is the experience of your own essential peace, which is your original state. The next thing that you can do is to recognize that when you are focused upon yourself in the essence of that quality, that that then radiates as an atmosphere around you, and it becomes possible for you to extend that radiation globally so that you can actually produce an atmosphere of peace. But you can't do that until you have accessed the experience of your own inner peace. Now, if you find that your own inner peace is insufficient for that, or that the level of it is too low, then you can also turn your attention to a higher power or higher source, which is also sometimes described as the origin of peace or the ocean of peace. And that is a little bit like a laser beam that you send out, a laser beam of focused thought to another focused point of light, which we can also call the higher soul. And then when you have made contact, which is a very, very subtle thing that you do in your mind or with the power of your mind, you then are able to, as it were, turn on a faucet so that you then can channel peace, which you can then extend throughout the world. And that is a very practical way of doing it.
Now, you mentioned channel peace, and then you mentioned extend throughout the world. That brings me to my other question about goal, specific goal. Channeling seems to imply that there is some specific goal that is foremost in what you want to do with this effort. And I'd like to know what that is, as opposed to a general bathing of the entire world in the...
That's a good enough goal.
Ideal...
Yeah, I think that we are better off if we're not too specific, because one of the things that people who are engaged in spiritual practice are aware of is that whatever is that higher intelligence that is organizing things actually has usually better ideas about how it should all go than we do. So that if we make ourselves focused and allow ourselves to be vehicles for the passing of that peace energy to spread throughout, then we are actually doing the best thing, because then that peace can go where it wants to go or where it needs to go. And so the main thing, though, is that if I can take out of myself all those things, all those susceptibilities to conflict and violence, then there is a self-purification going on, which is a necessary part of contributing to peace in the world. Because if I haven't made my peace with myself and the people who I've been in connection with in the past and will be in the future, then I cannot really do that work properly. And then I have to extend and radiate the energy of my thought with a feeling of goodwill, of benevolence to all people without any restriction and without any judgment.
Does that help you, Gary?
Yes, it certainly does. My thoughts and heart are with you in that effort. I
hope right.
It sinks into the great minds, as you call them, of our time.
I'm sure it will.
We look with them quite askance.
Anger is one of the things that is so prevalent today, just with what's going on in the atmosphere and everything else. And just to get in touch with your own internal state of peace is going to create a peaceful environment far greater.
Gary, I appreciate
talking to you.
Appreciate your comments and your interest, and don't you dare not be with us any Saturday night. Okay?
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So glad to have you aboard. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's open.
How are you doing, Mr. Jenkins?
I'm doing fine. I'm thinking minutes of peace. What are you thinking?
Pretty much the same thing.
Good.
Speaking of peace, I wanted to ask the last lady on your panel who was speaking to the caller. What was her name?
Sister Denise.
Sister Denise. Hi, how are you?
Fine.
God bless you.
Thank you, you too.
It was just struck me when you finished, just about when you finished speaking, that what you were just expressing was prayer and meditation. Would you say that too?
Yes, that's right.
You see, some people, they think of meditation as something formal. Some people, they think of prayer as something somebody else has written and that they intone.
Mm-hmm. But ritual, then rote, and ceremony.
Mm-hmm. And the human being actually really benefits from those things. But then this is the world of free spirits, and California is the place where we can do what we like, when we like, how we like, which is one of the wonderful reasons why we're here. And so it's possible for us to let our imagination run and develop our own thoughts. And if our thoughts are new and fresh and beautiful every day, then we will not just be intoning things that we don't really mean, but it'll have a reality, and therefore it will extend much further.
Really? Were you the one that was talking about thinking for oneself? Or was that...
I think we all were, but
yeah,
everybody
was. But anyway, my question was toward Vivian Gladden. Are you there, Vivian?
I'm here. Yes.
She did not leave. Her time's not up. We got her chained to the.
Anyway, I've heard you and your husband a few times on the Bob's show.
This is Bill's
Bill show. Bill show.
Nice being back again to talk with old friends.
Right. And I have heard, you know, you speak about it. I think I even spoke to you once, but I have yet to read the book. I must read the...
Are you in the Los Angeles area?
Yes.
Go to the Bodhi Tree. You can pick it up there.
What's the name of the store?
The Bodhi Tree.
B-O-D-H-I
on Melrose in Los Angeles.
Bodhi Tree. Alexandria.
Out in Pasadena.
Yes.
Oh, I'm closer to Melrose.
Uh-huh.
Right. Anyway, the question.
You know,
I want to ask you.
You don't buy time on the show with Alexandria, too, does.
Alexandria, that. Oh, lovely people out there. Excuse me a moment. The gentleman out at the Alexandria called for aired the other day.
Did he, Ralph?
Uh-huh. And Lee went out and had a nice visit with him.
They're
lovely, lovely people out there.
They're wonderful people out there.
Yes.
Well, both of the stores are great. Yeah, they really are.
Yes, and yes, but you continue.
I'm going to have to buy this book. Anyway, the question that... I wanted to ask, it's fascinating the study that you do. I study languages myself.
Do you?
And it's really interesting. But it always, and tonight when I was listening at the top of the other hour, a man questioning about the atomic things, but it seemed to me, well, even though it was cultural and linguistic, and yet to be more scientific than religious, and I fail to see the religious ramifications of your book, although tonight I certainly heard some religious things.
Well,
spiritual things, not religious.
Well, spiritual, right.
Well, we took it is a space-age interpretation of the Bible, and the information that came forward came from biblical etymology, and then on deeper and deeper we went, an archaeologist digging for artifacts from antiquity, we went deeper into the root words, and those words were words that came out of spiritual literature. And so they...
Is that how you found the code?
That's how we found it.
But go ahead. I still... Could you just give me, like, an example of something spiritual that you learned, say?
Well, yes. Dealing with the Holy Spirit or the biocosmic energy, yes.
Okay.
We spoke of that earlier.
I just started listening about 5 to 11.
Uh-huh. Yes, the Holy Spirit. It said that...
Chris, we started at 9. Well,
God created... The Spirit of God moved upon the waters, and that word ruach...
Genesis.
Yes, is in Hebrew. It's a great breath, a mighty wind, but... Going deeper, we found that it had to do with what the Russians are calling the bioplasmic energy, or the St. Paul spoke of the energy in which we live and move and have our being.
Mm-hmm.
And
the physicists are calling it now scalar.
Scalar, yes, or
we can even call it the energy of thought.
The energy of thought, absolutely. Again, we're dealing here with semantics, but that you see, if we've got a wrong concept of what we get that word religion in there, and suddenly we're just caught up in a kind of in a cobweb of thought.
That's true.
Yeah,
are you saying we have a wrong concept of the deity?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
As a matter of fact, you know about it, Chris.
By Jove, you've got it.
Well, but you know, there's a certain properness in the fact that every individual spirit or individual has a unique concept of God. You know what I mean?
Well, yes. Let me say this. In our book, Heirs of the Gods, chapter 13, we deal extensively with this subject, the biocosmic energy, Pentecost, the biocosmic energy, and the Holy Spirit. I think you'd find that most interesting.
Where was that? Chapter what?
Chapter 13.
No, I'm kidding.
In our book.
Okay.
Yes.
Heirs of the Gods.
Heirs of the Gods.
I knew it was that book. Okay, well, you definitely...
He wasn't talking about Corinthians.
You've definitely shed some light that I didn't have before.
Well, thank you for calling.
See, you
nice talking with you. Your question...
You should have got in here at 9 o'clock instead of 11.
Yeah, I should have.
Well, now, next week, tune in at 9 o'clock.
Well, thank you all, and may you all be very spirited.
All right, Chris,
thank you very much
for your interest.
Thank you very
much.
And
we hope that you join us again.
Thank you.
And we have Michael on the line. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
All right.
I'm interested for a couple of reasons. Number one, I have at home the conversational notes between some of them, anyhow, between Billy Meyer and the Palladians,
mm-hmm.
where they speak of, among other things, the concept of deity as creation and creator being one and the same thing, which is kind of exciting, and other information that I think you've already gleaned, and I'm sure you've been exposed to all those conversations.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the reason I called is I was listening to Sister Denise and... speaking about the necessary aspect of individuality in terms of approaching world peace. And some time ago, I believe I met Sister Diane, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I'm really driving at is I wanted to share my concept and my kind of philosophy with you in a kind of unique way. So if you'll bear with me, I'm going to do it just like this.
Okay.
I was looking for somebody to believe in. Someone who'd save the day when things went wrong. Someone who'd live and die for all the things I only cry for. Someone who'd change my life with just a song. And I was looking for someone with all the answers. Someone who'd show me how to play the game. And be stronger than the sadness, all the anger and the madness. But the answer came from my own heart instead. So I'll be my own hero. I'll make my own magic. I'll change the endings that used to be tragic. I'll be all I am without armor or mask. I'll be my own hero, my own hero at last. No, I don't need no one to come and save me or show me how my life's supposed to be. I'll keep on taking chances, finding my own answers. Love's the only savior that I need. And I'll be my own hero. I'll make my own magic. I'll change the endings that used to be tragic. I'll be all I am. I'll let love lead me on. I'll be my own hero. And I'll sing my own song.
Michael?
Said it all.
Michael, thank you so very much.
My pleasure, Bill.
There is a reason for everything, Michael.
I've been waiting about a year to do that for you, Bill.
Well, let me do something for you, if I may.
Yes, I'll listen.
I want you to, if you don't mind, bring that song to me, because we are planning a 3-hour television special. And I want to use you in that song, in that special. I have been looking for that song for an element of the show called The Reality of Self.
Oh, you just gave me chills in that one, Don.
Chills to a million.
So may I use the song and may I use you?
Absolutely. I'll be in the studio tomorrow and I'll have it ready for you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. God bless you all.
Because that says it so very, very beautifully, Michael.
It means a lot to me too, Don.
I appreciate
you. To all of you. I'll have it to you this week.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
That was a magic moment for me. I don't know about you, but I can't tell you how much I have been looking for a song that said just that for the TV show. And I have listened to so many to use there. Michael, you had better show up, or I'm going to find you, boy, and wring your neck if you don't. All right. Mimi, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I really agree that the thought is energy, and it's electric, and it's transferable, and that you can project it. So I'm a believer. But what I'd like to know is, we talked about this expedition down in South America.
Yes.
And I wondered, if people are everywhere, or if it's all around, why do they have to go to South America?
They are all
around. They find it here.
For some reason or another, there seems to be a great deal of activity in South America that is being noticed by large groups of people that governmental agencies and police are responding to, and it can be easily documented, or more easily than before. And in fact, it's being documented worldwide, and it's hitting global press. The sightings and the other incidents are going on all over the world simultaneously, but there is a great influx and a great interest in South America. The South American people are aware of them. The people in South America, it's a fact of life.
Other forms of activity are escalating now.
Yeah. And they see them all the time, and it's almost like seeing another car on the freeway to those folks down there.
Is it only in South America?
No. It's everywhere.
People in South America are highly spiritual in comparison with the rest of the world, which would explain why the attraction would be to there.
They're not quite so blasé about them. You know, here in Los Angeles, if one was to land on the freeway, they would be, cursing at it for blocking the traffic, and that's what would be on their mind, you know.
A certain kind of purity that goes with that kind of sight.
You mentioned having good thoughts, but when I'm going to commute on the freeway, it's very hard for me to do.
That sure is
the best time to do it. If you
can tell me how to do that.
Get some tape or something that is very, very good and focus your attention way outside yourself down the road somewhere, you'll be able to see anything that's going on and more than you can when you may remain internally focused on the anger and the traffic and all of that. And become peaceful.
If somebody wants to cut in front of you, let him have it, you know?
Right. Well, give it to him, exactly.
It always amazes me about people on the freeway, that little space in front of your car. Now, we all know that that was willed to you by your great-great-grandfather. And it is family property, and that is a settler on there that is trying to take away your land.
Which is moving at 80 miles an hour.
I really appreciate your thoughts on this, because I need all the help I can get. Can you also use this for healing yourself?
Oh, yes. I'm glad you asked that question.
I mean, I'm very serious, because I...
14 lights just went on here.
That's what it's about.
Go ahead, girls.
Are there any special techniques for doing this?
I use the... I'm involved in the, this is Vivian, involved in the healing arts in my practice in nutrition.
Uh-huh.
And I use what is known actually as guided imagery.
Oh,
But it's something much more profound really than that. The time has come that we have got to take quantum leaps and take people up and away in terms of expanding their consciousness quickly to help them, because we're in a little trouble. It's an awesome age, and wonderful, beautiful things are happening. But what I do is to, according to the individual that I am nurturing, I don't like to use the word working with. As such, you see, because it's an interaction of beauty, of being with nurturing and loving this person in a way that they need to be loved, that they have obviously not been loved, or they would not be involved in the particular problems that they're having. So if you would like to call me, I'd be very happy to chat with you.
And was that the...
Give number.
Are you in the Los Angeles area?
Valley area.
Yes. Well, I'm in 213-658-5195. 213-658-5195. This is my mission in life, which has to do with heirs of the gods. We found many, many things in the research to do with
what we're here for.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, yes. And Sister Joan also is very much involved in the holistic program in the healing art.
There's absolutely no question that meditation or thought can help you on a physical level. The connection is incredible between the mental and the physical. And without the thought, you can't do anything. You absolutely can't do a thing. Even if you take a pill and believe it'll work, that's one example. But the thought that you can do for yourself and the healing you can do for yourself is cumulative and can be used globally as well.
I have an idea on how to drive in the traffic for you.
Oh, yeah.
Because I do a great deal of my meditating in the car. On the freeway.
Oh,
I do too. That's my favorite thing.
And because I am involved in that, I am not involved in the idiotic things that are going on around me. I never have a problem, but I sure get a lot of thought done. Mm-hmm. And then my next other thought spot is the spa.
Oh.
You see, the car is the perfect place. You're all by yourself, usually. And there is no distraction, there is no invasion. You have your ideal little bubble in which you can create that into an extraordinary sanctuary. And no one will bother you between the time when you leave for your destination and the time when you arrive.
Unless you turn Al Jarreau up full blast.
Or you have a phone in your car, that could be a problem.
No phone, no. Kendra Bob sometimes.
Well, that's... You're forgiven for that.
Another place is supermarket lines. If you can get your thoughts together in supermarket lines, that's another place to give them laundromats.
Oh, okay.
Those are...
All right, Mimi, does that help you?
Thank you very much.
Right. Mind and body are... They're...
Living life in every way with KABC Talk Radio 79.
It's Saturday night. It's 9 o'clock. The Dodgers have done their thing already today. That means that we have 3 hours, you and I, for this Saturday night journey into the world of the open mind, we call it. We want to open your mind to the vista of the world as it existed in the past and as it exists now. And perhaps the way it should exist in the future, and there are ways to get there. Come on over. Well, now that we're here, one of the most sought after guests that we have had on the show, who fascinated us time and time again on the show, because of that incredible book of theirs called Heirs of the Gods, was Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden. Well, Lee Gladden isn't here tonight. The good doctor is in Colorado Springs, but Vivian Gladden is here tonight. Vivian, welcome to Open Mind.
Thank you, Bill. It's wonderful to be back home again.
You want to put that little red dot? There you go. You got that. Say it again.
It's wonderful to be back home again.
It is home.
Yes, it is. Yes. We've had some wonderful times, haven't we?
Yes, we have. And it was time to review not only the world that we found in that incredible book of yours. Incredible, wrong word. That's not to be believed is what the word incredible means. That astounding book of yours, Heirs of the Gods. But where we're going now, there seems to be some new research that you have done.
Yes.
There seems to be some very pertinent things that apply to the time in which we are currently experiencing.
The things we didn't dare to put in the book some years ago for fear we might have been burned to a specific stake.
You're an open mind, and so therefore you can put them down, because we do that.
That's the joy of being here with you.
Let's take a look at Heirs of the Gods. For those, you know, it's been a while since you have been here. In my library, Heirs of the Gods is one of the most important books up on that important...
That you can hardly ever keep on the shelf.
I can't keep it on the shelf, but I do have one up there chained. I don't know how many of those I have lost, but it is must reading, I think. Give me a sketch and take as much time as you want to about Heirs of Gods.
Well, where do we begin? We begin at the beginning. Of course, we did the work about, I guess, 8 or 9 years ago. It was a lifetime work, as you know. And as in any field of endeavor, you start out very often with one paradigm or one approach. And as you get deeper into the work, something magnificent happens.
Astounding.
Truly astounding.
That's what you found.
Yes, yes. As we got deeper into the etymology, because as you know, we worked in the root words,
mm-hmm.
and we found encoded messages in the sacred literature.
Well, let me put it in a way that I like to tell the story.
Please do. I know you want to tell the story, don't you, Bill?
That we have all seen artifacts all over the world, in every culture, that are extremely ancient. And those artifacts were cuneiforms or writings or hieroglyphics or whatever. There was something about them that we didn't understand. It was like gobbledygook when those were first discovered hundreds of years ago. But as our technology and as our awareness of the world around us increased as a society and as an enlightened society, all at once we began reading things and those ancient words. We could understand, we could decipher them as if they had been, there had been one thing told for the simple mind, but there had been a real story encoded in that for the more illicit mind. And you and your husband, Lee, went to such an artifact and worked very closely with it and all of its attendant literature. And came up with an astounding story.
Well,
that artifact was the Bible.
Yes, the artifact was the Bible. And heretofore, when you've... many people don't really want to hear anything about the Bible because it has been so misunderstood and misused and used for self-aggrandizement in terms of whatever
they want.
What can I say? Whatever evil... that they wanted to use it for, and so...
The Bible is not the world of Jerry Falwell and Gene Scott
not.
And the Pope and the rest of them.
The Bible, along with the Tao Te Ching, the Bhagavad Gita, the Talmud, all of the sacred literature, the way I like to put it, in terms of our archaeolinguistics, because we started out with biblical etymology,
mm-hmm.
which went into archaeolinguistics. And I like to say that archaeolinguistics isolates and identifies concepts of alien intrusion into sacred literature, into the sacred text, which is, as you so wonderfully put it, encoded,
mm-hmm.
and which could not have been understood until the age of technology or the age of high technology.
And the technology was not unique to you and Lee,
by the
way.
Of course not. No.
Dr. Crick, who discovered the DNA molecule... Jeffrey Goodman, who's one of our leading anthropologists.
Yes, well, Jeffrey was on with us, remember?
Right.
Yes, had a wonderful time.
And they were
time
talking about the fact that an intervention occurred in the evolution of mankind. That in the twinkling of an eye, there was man.
In a twinkling of an eye, there was, as we say, when we first came on the air talking about genetic engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember how everyone was aghast, and then a year or so later, time had...
There it was.
There it was, genetic engineering.
We were a little bit avant-garde with
it. Yes, yes. I like to pause here and refer to Schliemann.
Hmm?
Before Schliemann went into his digs, they thought that they were saying that Homer was just, you know, mythology. Well, the story, we all know the story. He found
mm-hmm.
Troy.
Found Troy, surely.
He married a woman from there. And put all the jewels on her and took her back to London. He sent a telegram to the King of Spain in 1898 and said, "I've just gazed upon the face of Agamemnon." And my husband, Dr. Lee Gladden, and myself, we say that we have gazed beyond the face of Agamemnon.
Mm-hmm. He went back further.
Into the future. So it's so incredible, the things that we found. And the things that we found 8 or 9 years ago, they have become an effect to complete now, and we are going on into even these earthquakes. We'll get into that later.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we have
that are happening
to
now.
About the today and
yes,
now.
Yes, yes, yes. But
we will do that.
I'd like to pause here and say we've got some wonderful guests, if I may say,
you
with
certainly
us
have.
With us this evening.
Would you introduce them?
Yes, I would like to. I'm about
touch
10 minutes overdue introducing these lovely
ladies. Touch your red buttons there, ladies. There you are.
We have Joan Derry, Sister Joan Derry, who is a Brahma Kumari. We're going to explain who the Brahma Kumaris are, about a quarter of a million of these wonderful women all over the world. It's a lot of numbers.
One's enough. A quarter of a million.
And Sister Denise. And they will tell you themselves their particular involvement and expertise is that, first of all, we're here for the Million Minutes of Peace and International Appeal, which is the United Nations Year for Peace. And we're going to talk tonight, I hope, about what is peace. It's not just ringing the bells, jingle bells, Kris Kringle, Merry Christmas, and all of that kind of thing. That's fine.
Peace is a state of being.
State of being, and what does that state of being involve? What are we striving for? In terms of what is happening upon this earth today, in terms of a co-creation. So if Sister Gary and Ms. Sister Denise would give us a little bit of introduction of themselves.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about the Million Minutes of Peace. I'm glad to be on the program to be able to talk about it.
Proud to have you here.
Nice to be here. The Million Minutes of Peace is an international appeal. And internationally, what we are doing is we're asking people to give from 1 to 30 minutes. I know it's a lifetime thing, but it's enough for some people. 1 to 30 minutes per day, per week, for 1 month, in thoughts, either through prayer, meditation, or thoughts, of peace. And it's the United Nations International Year of Peace. And so we're asking them to donate or pledge these minutes of peace between September 16th and October 16th. And at the end of that, the minutes will be presented to the United Nations. And that is the gist of the appeal. There's so much talk of peace. There's so much action around peace. And in a way, peace has been misunderstood. And we're asking people to stop just for a few minutes a day or per week, if that's what they need, and think about peace.
Does the United Nations understand the very real power of human thought? The reason I ask this question is, by and large, you have a number of politicians at the United Nations. Their interest generally is very colloquial, onto their own nation and their own little groups. Do they understand the power of thought? Do they understand that thought is in the virtual state, that it is a thing, and that thought goes to work? Are they looking at you and saying, well, here are some nice people who want to think nice thoughts, but that won't have anything to do with this great game of politics that I'm playing at the Secretariat Building in New York? And there are a lot of people that want to throw it out of New York, you know.
Yes, I do. I think I'll leave that up to Sister Denise, who deals directly with him.
All right, Denise. Are we dealing with politics, or are we dealing with the where people at the United Nations?
Of course, the preoccupations that made it possible for the practical administration of the United Nations to become a reality was political. But what happened there and what happens in so many places is the power of the ideals in certain people who are key within the United Nations, and particularly Robert Mueller and Uth Hunt were driven in their work by this awareness of the power of pure thought and I have had a lot of occasion to discuss it with Robert Mueller and with others who are within the United Nations, so that I am very much aware that there are people who are conscious of the power of thought and who have worked very strongly and for a very long time to encourage others who are there from a more political standpoint to become aware of it. And one of the things that I'm aware of is that people who are in political positions are aware of the power of thought, sometimes even afraid of the power of thought, because it is considered to be much, much greater than the power of the atom, for example. Now, the thing that's interesting about the appeal is that the power of thought is being mobilized. We are seeing, I think, Joan, we've got about up till now 48 countries mm-hmm. who are involved in Los Angeles just by saying about this to a few people for a few days. We immediately got 11,000 minutes committed without even really trying. And I know that when a number of people think the same thing at the same time, it can move mountains. And people are very familiar with the 100th monkey idea, which sure. is simply an example of how thought can make things become realities.
Rupert Sheldrake, his paradigm.
Mm-hmm. Morphogenetic
field. Certainly. Mm. You see that growing, what Rupert had to say.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And maybe the species will change its characterization just a little bit by a massive effort such as this. Because that there is a basic character of the species, whether it's a plant or an animal or a human being. And I sometimes wonder about the basic human character that Rupert describes out there. It can be changed, of course, but that takes massive effort.
And this is what the Million and Peace is all about. It's quite
he's also a patron of this particular appeal.
I would imagine that Rupert would be.
Yes, he is.
He, of course, has been one of the guests on the show. So, we have a Million Minutes of Peace, an international appeal, and with us is Dr. Vivian Gladden, who has been here so often before. And I'm not going to let her get off of the airs of the gods because I want to acquaint this audience with that. So you've been gone about 18 months, you know. It's been
not that long. Yeah. Been awfully busy.
People don't know about those wonderful folks that from Arcturus that had a great deal of to do with our very existence right now, and probably with what you're doing right now, in a way. They are coming back.
Oh, they're on the way back. The launch window's open.
The launch window started.
How many times have we said that on this show?
1976 is when the launch window started?
A little before that.
Was it?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
In terms of physics that you and I understand, we don't know exactly all about their physics, do we? And with Vivian is Joan Derry and Sister Denise. And we're talking about the world of the past, the world of our beginnings, and the world of now.
World of now.
And the world of where we're going to go. And we have
and
some
the future is now. It is crowding in upon us.
We have some very important choices to make now, and they are that. We can make them. We kind of at a crossroads. And I kind of like one road. The other road, I don't like where it's going at all.
Bill, you're doing some exciting things now. Want to share some of them?
Some of them I wish I could.
But those things that you can you?
I cannot share. Well, I've shared some.
Yes.
There is a time and place, you know, for all things. We want them to happen rightly and properly. And they are going to happen. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's open to my half to... going to have to tell us about Heirs of the Gods for those that have not been with us before. All right? We've touched on it before. You went to an ancient artifact. You found an incredible story about the intervention of alien beings in the evolutionary processes of the life on planet Earth. And the artifact that you went to that told you that story was the Bible.
And those alien beings, we say, were God and the angels, Jehovah and the angels. In Psalms 103, 104.
Jehovah was not the creator of the universe?
No, the biocosmic energy. They speak of the Holy Spirit. It says, and the Spirit moved upon mm-hmm. his spirit. He used this energy. You know, we're doing a lot of research now. I mentioned to you the other day when we spoke about synchrotron energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we found that.
Mm-hmm.
And we found what the black holes were. which are not black holes, vistas of light, universe upon universe upon universe. We have the oculinguistics to support that, as you know. Right. Thousands and thousands of entries to go to the computer.
It's amazing what the ancients knew, isn't it? They seem to know it all.
Yes.
But to get back to Heirs of the Gods, you told me something that was very startling. That the term that refers to, and getting back to the root words, the etymology that was used...
Archaeolinguistics.
Or archaeolinguistics. That refers to the creator of the universe. That term was only used twice in the Bible.
Mm-hmm. You're speaking of the biocosmic energy of the Holy Spirit, because
right.
Yahweh, or Jehovah, is actually the Elohim.
Mm-hmm. So it was only used twice, and it was in the first chapter of Genesis. So what's the rest of this we hear about? We hear Jehovah, we hear my Lord God Jehovah.
Well, the Lord God, a lot of times when they refer to the Lord or the Lord God, they're talking about Jehovah, and a lot of times they're talking about, say, someone like, it says the Elohim are God, goddesses, Melchizedek,
mm-hmm.
which are male and female, where they sort of left that out. Remember, that was an issue with me. Remember, they said...
Well, I think there were females. There were
of course, it says the root word, Melech,
right.
the root word, M-A-L for the female, and M-E-L, Melchizedek, that was the root word, the feminine derivative.
There was most likely a female along with Lucifer, who was a Melchizedek.
We've discussed that, haven't we? Of course, Lucifer was...
I don't know whether
was.
They have or not.
Yes, Lucifer was a Melchizedek, absolutely.
And he's still around.
Oh, he's round. Yes, yeah.
But we always want to give him sort of a spiritual sense, rather than a human sense, that he is just a spirit that does evil all of the time. This is really not a true look at Lucifer, is it?
No. That he does evil all the time? We're talking about fallen celestials and victorious
mm-hmm.
celestials,
mm-hmm.
you see. And
celestials being people from another world.
Yeah.
Human beings from another world.
Yes. Extraterrestrial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not angels in the sense of...
Well, an angel just simply means messenger.
Something out of heaven.
No, see, here's the thing that we're dealing with. We're dealing with, for instance, will you say the King James Version? We're dealing with, it was written actually in Elizabethan language.
Yes, it was.
So when you say, it was not written in Aramaic.
No.
So when you say angels or cherubim, which are several mechanisms, we're talking about cherubim or robots, which we couldn't have understood until the space age, and angels, we're talking about anthropomorphic beings. They're messengers. That's the word you get for angels. They're anthropomorphic beings. And all of this other jargon that you get has been superimposed by the
tradition of the
yes.
time. The anthropomorphic. Explain that word to me. You know, I'm from...
What, archaeolinguistic?
No, anthropomorphic.
Well, anthropomorphic.
Yeah.
Oh, humanoid.
Humanoid or human? Possibly human? You talk about Jehovah being human.
Yes, human beings, millions of years in our technological future, billions
mm-hmm.
of years in our technological future. You know, we spoke of Stephen of Dole,
mm-hmm.
said that there are at least a million inhabited planets in our galaxy alone, which is the Milky Way. So does Carl Sagan say that?
We just don't seem to have had too much contact.
It's not the best of all possible worlds.
No, this is we're way down on the totem pole here.
Right.
But it's amazing how many people think that this is the epitome, that the planet Earth is the epitome of the evolvement of human life. If this is the crown of God's achievement, he should bury his head in the sand.
Well, it has anything to do with... remember I mentioned Psalms 139? I said that was a computer. It says all of my members were in your book. All of my members were in thy book when yet there was none of them. They were recorded in thy book, and yet there was none of them. And we go back to the Hebrew word there, golem,
mm-hmm.
which gave us the coiled or wrapped roll, which led, I told you, to actually the word helioso, and sunliklid in the Greek, which led me actually to the word helix.
Mm-hmm.
Double helix. Remember?
A double helix. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
How that relates to the DNA molecule.
Mm-hmm.
And what
Absolutely.
Is the DNA molecule to... That makes us.
Anabolism, I found from the word that tree that's in the midst of the paradise of God. Oh, it's a marvelous, exciting story. It really is. I kept looking for tree in the etymology to see what I would get with tree. And I kept getting tree, you know. Or I kept getting what traditionally we know as a termed as a tree. And then I got the word, the tree that's in the midst of the paradise of God, and the word midst led me to the word meta, and that word led me to anabolism, catabolism, anabolism to break, to build up, anabolism to catabolism to break down, to the Greek word sunikrit, which led to the word, actually, which is also a derivative of paraclete, which is the comforter, you know, they speak of, Jesus speaks of the comforter, I will send the comforter, which is the paraclete. And led me to actually the word helix for the tree that was in the garden. Well, you know.
Yeah, the garden. It's all in Heirs of the Gods. Yeah. And we have done that story. But if you haven't, is there a second edition out?
Not yet, but there will be.
You must get it out.
Oh, there will be, yes.
Not to digress.
We're writing a nutritional book from this, you know.
But out of your research that you have taken just in the ancient literature, and your research is so very well supported by the writings of Zechariah Sitchin, who certainly comes from a totally different point of view. He goes to the ancient Sumerian Babylonian literature. Now, those old people who were writing back there 5,000 and 6,000 or 7,000 years ago were either science fiction writers far beyond Ray Bradbury, or they were historians, as they talked about the great nuclear holocaust that happened in the Sinai Peninsula at the year 2024 B.C.
That's accurate.
Yes, it's accurate. You know, that's very well defined in history. That where there were 7 atomic bombs that were blasted off at that time. One of them hit Sodom and Gomorrah, by the way. It was witnessed by Abraham.
The Titanites, you know about, that they found some of those, the residue that that was found there in Gomorrah was of the same ilk that was found in Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Well, the entire Sinai Peninsula is covered with this black on top of all the rocks, the rocks that haven't been turned over, but there's this black thing.
I discussed this with Sister Denise at some point. Do you want to...
Which, of course, is the byproduct of a nuclear explosion.
Absolutely. Make a comment on this, because we discussed this.
Well, I think one of the most interesting things that we found when we met with Viviane is that what we study in the Brahma Kumari's literature and what she has researched validates one another in the most extraordinary way. And then, you see, when we bring those historical awarenesses into connection with what is going on at the present, what we are discovering is that the present time and the immediate future is the period of time in which we are going to be experiencing once again those things that are being described in the history books as the most momentous events of human history, which makes this the most fantastic time to be living in. And of course, very important is for us to be able to read into these historical documents in order to get clarity on what is being asked of us now as human beings. And what you were talking earlier on about civilization, one of the things that we have found is that there is a juxtaposition of the least civilized period in time with the most civilized period in time, in which there is a dramatic change in human consciousness. And so we think that that period of time is upon us. And so that when we're working on this project, A Million Minutes of Peace Appeal, it looks like you're just sitting there thinking about peace, but there's much more to it than that, because when you can mobilize people's thoughts in such a way that you're able to make, as it were, a quantum leap of thought, then you can never go back to the way you thought before, and that will alter the course of history dramatically.
I'm going to give you a dramatic announcement here in just a second, but Viviane, according to your research, are we in a period in which we're going to be visited again by the celestials, or has that period ever stopped?
The period has never stopped, and they're here, and they've always been here. That's why we mentioned the victorious celestials and the fallen celestials. However, according to our research, the archaeolinguistics, there will be a great gathering in, a gathering up we've become so prejudiced by, again, by the language that has been used by the, by traditionalists, shall we say, that...
You're being kind.
Yes. It's early in the evening, yes. And in which prejudices us from... keeps us very often from the knowledge that would free us and lift us up to take the blinders off and take the veil from our eyes so that we can make this thrust to understand what is... You've heard of that, you know, I think it was Judy Garland used to say, that great thing, that great come and get it day.
Yeah.
Well, that day is... It's here.
And now, let me tell you about a report I got today.
I'd like to hear anything that you have to tell us about getting closer to that great come and get it day.
You know, there are a lot of things that I just don't put on the air, but this one I have to, I have to share about it. I'm very involved with an expedition which is now in South America. With video cameras, camera crews, and all of that. We had very sound reasons to believe that we would get some very significant television footage of our celestial friends. In fact, we were invited to come down by them. I received the first report of them today. Indeed, they have it. And they have considerable video footage and video examination of the people who witnessed this. One of the contacts was a little bit violent, I don't think, and out of any kind of violent nature, but the wood was burned off the door as they came into the house to abduct this individual. And there's a great deal of footage of what happened to the house. There's a great deal of footage of where the craft landed, not too far away, on concrete and burned. The craft landed and burned the concrete. Now, we cannot burn the concrete that way, and a great deal of scientific examination of that, which is on videotape, and that work is going on right now. In this particular instance, there were over 250 eyewitnesses, and all of those have been interviewed, including the chief of police and people of great stature who watched and had witnessed this whole thing going on.
Ezekiel was not the only one. It's been going on all...
There are seven of those events that the team is following up right now down in South America. And we are acquiring probably the most unique footage that has ever existed of the comings and goings of our friends from outer space. They are there. Those people down there are not hallucinating. They are not seeing swamp cats. We have footage of the radar screens being just canceled out by the presence of these things, of aircraft coming into São Paulo, Brazil, losing their electrical power when they got near. This is all documented. This is real. And if the guys at Caltech don't understand it, that doesn't bother me at all. There's a lot that they don't understand over at Caltech. Yeah. And it's about time that they start realizing that it's going on. And I will be more than happy.
They realize it, though.
Well, they realize it. They know what's going on. We will be making some television things available for you. We don't know in just what form of the footage that it's being taken down there. We certainly will be doing a show with Paul and his group whenever they get back from what they have seen themselves and the eyewitnesses that they have and the footage that they have, because this is documented in real stuff now, and there are serious media crews at work following up these things, which are happening in South America at the present time, but that's not the only place it's going on in the world, but we have limited
resources.
There's
going to be more of it, as we said in the air,
And so we would do it. You know, Uncle Sam won't do it. He's got more important things to do.
Your uncle.
Yeah, my uncle and your uncle. And we're getting behind time here. We have another uncle.
But we always do that, don't we?
We have an uncle here that wants to say hello to all of you and help pay for this process. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's open mind. We have so much to ramble about here between now and midnight. With me is Dr. Vivienne Gladden, Joan Derry, and Sister Denise. We're talking about the Million Minutes of Peace. That's an international appeal, but we wanted to get into that. Well, there's a very profound reason for doing that. It goes back into antiquity. And it certainly goes back to Dr. Gladden's brilliant work of Heirs to the Gods. And I'm not going to let you get off of that. What else did Heirs of the Gods tell us? Heirs of the Gods told us, for instance, that Joseph, Jehovah, was not the creator of the universe. That Jehovah was the leader, spiritual and physical, I suppose.
No, Jehovah was not the creator of the universe. They applied genetic engineering and reconstructed and recreated us from the hominids that were already here. If you notice in chapter 4 in Genesis, when the Lord God, which is not Jehovah, comes to Cain and says, "What is this you've done? You've killed your brother. Now I have to, you have to be, I'm going to put you out
of the garden."
Because before that, it's very clear that they were very close to the laboratory, to Eden.
Now we got to backtrack.
Yes.
We have to backtrack a little bit.
Eden, their spacecraft.
Let me paint the picture.
Oh, I know you love it.
In Heirs of the Gods, an expeditionary group came to Earth from I guess its headquarters was in a planet that's in orbit around Maseroth, that's in orbit around Arcturus.
Arcturus, yes.
And they came to Earth.
That's Job 38.
Job 38, right there. Mm-hmm. And they came to Earth to start a new society. But they didn't colonize this Earth by bringing their people down here and letting them start living as we see in all of the science fiction pictures. They did it in a much more subtle way. They took the indigenous life forms of the planet, took their DNA, looked at it, and combined it with their own to develop a whole new species which had the great characteristics of both.
How many times did you read Heirs of the Gods?
Oh, about 45,000 times. And developed a whole new living human being which was tailor-made for the planet Earth. It had the physical attributes of the indigenous hominoids, or I guess the Neanderthals, or the other ones that were around here at times. And then replicated them in a replicator and started a new society. They had some problems. They set up a whole protected area.
Eden was the laboratory.
Eden was the laboratory. The protected area extended what from the western shores of, or the eastern shores of the Mediterranean and the kind of dogleg down the Tigris-Euphrates Valley to the Persian Gulf, right?
Exactly.
That whole area was protected from weather and all of the other things.
Force fields.
Mm-hmm. We would call those scalar interferometers.
Scalar.
We know exactly. We see them. As they are described in Genesis, the glowing, the firmament in the sky, that's exactly what happens over Sarasegian and the other places where these are used.
Bring that now to protect us from all these earthquakes that are...
That's right. And then they had some political problems along the way. The head of the task force had another idea that was sort of against the standing order, as it were, which upset his boss, which was Jehovah. He was relieved of his command. Took a little fight.
How art thou fallen?
Yes, that was Lucifer. Lucifer made some mistakes. And I don't want to go into the whole story here, although it's fascinating as it is. Lucifer was forcefully relieved of his command, and then he was marooned on the planet with these smart animals that he had created. Man, because they had to take their technology and leave because their timetable was off. Their launch window was up.
They had to go.
They had to leave.
They were colonizing like we're thinking, like we're going. We're going.
Earth was just one of thousands of places.
Yes. And they'll be back.
They will come back. Mm-hmm. You know, this is one that didn't work as well as they had liked it. And they'll deal with Lucifer when they get back.
Well, I like to interject this in terms of Cain again, to go back for a moment. So, he said, you'll have to leave. And he said, you're sending me away from the face of the earth. And they'll kill me if you send me out there. Who's going to kill him? Who was out there? It's supposed to be only these two people that was Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel. He said, if you send me out there, they're going to kill me.
Who were these other people?
The hominids that had already evolved. And he went out and he said he married his sister. Well, people say he married his sister. He didn't have a sister until after Seth.
Isn't it a possibility that there were other space beings that had the same capability of the people from Arcturus who had created...
These particular people were in this area, were, from our research, the people that had already evolved.
Mm-hmm.
The hominids that had evolved. And they used these people for the genetic engineering to create this Earth family that we call...
The human being.
Yes. Yes.
That was
we were intended, and of course, to live in my
And according to your research, there was indeed a person known as Adam.
Yes.
That Adam was not.
Adam just means Earth. Means man from the earth.
But there
the
was
earth
the
red.
First. There was the first of the new species.
Yes, absolutely.
And so
yes.
We call him Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the first female of the new species, and we can call her
Mother of all.
Eve.
But Jehovah did not. The world came into being through this energy,
mm-hmm.
through the biocosmic energy. And it's a beautiful passage in Proverbs that said that, I was with you as one brought up with you daily, and you used me in creating the world. So I don't know how the fundamentalists get off on the tangent that they get off
on. Well, maybe there's someone I'd like to talk to you tonight. Is that okay?
We got a couple of hours.
Let me give out the telephone number so that you can talk to Dr. Vivienne Gladden. She's the co-author of Heirs of the Gods. And that one should stick right up there by your Bible. You could just compare them back and forth.
It's Faith Age Interpretation of the Bible.
Space Age.
And my friends, Sister Joan Derry and Sister Denise, and I'd like to get very much into the cause and purpose and the wonderful...
We'll get into all of that because they are...
Well, I'm excited. I'm excited to get into that.
Let me give you the numbers. In Los Angeles, your number is 520-TALK. All the numbers end in TALK, T-A-L-K. In the San Fernando Valley, you're 990. I'll show.
Me.
but we're here.
Look at the wonderful work you're doing. Really, Bill, it's fine, fine work that you've been doing all these years. I sincerely mean that. All the millions of friends that you've made and the wonderful work that you've done to help get this kind of information out and to keep it out.
Just something to put on the table.
Wonderful for all of us, really.
Well, work like what you and Lee do make it so much easier for me because it is so profound. And you may not believe it, but they cannot take any pot shots at you. They can't take any pot shots at your academia. They cannot take any pot shots at your research. If they want to believe it or not is something that we are here for, and there's something new on the table for you. Let's see what Susan has. Or Sue, how are you? Are you there? Yeah, Sue, are you on? I'm punching number 7. Sue? Are you there, Sue?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, I had a question for the doctor.
Yes.
I was a member of the church, the Mormon church, for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And I never visited the temple or anything. But I was wondering, a lot of the things that they teach seem kind of similar to what you were just saying this evening. Like, they talk about different celestial beings and celestial, terrestrial kinds of things. And one thing is that near, I believe, the millennium, the world will be crystallized. And someone mentioned to me that when a major atomic kind of blast, nuclear kind of war, could produce this kind of crystallization.
Yes. If you were to read Peter, mm-hmm. it gives an excellent account there of what will happen. And the Mormons have got some information that is quite similar. And they happen to be, many of them happen to be quite, they embrace our work quite beautifully.
Oh, that's very, very true. Some of my dearest friends and associates are Mormons. I am not a Mormon. But they are. They feel very, very comfortable
with
Heirs of the Gods.
Yes.
It has a very, very familiar ring to them. As they read the writings of Joseph Smith and Moroni and the rest of it, although they're not on the same track you are, but there is a they can identify with it.
Well, yeah. This information is there; it's been there,
mm-hmm.
and it will continue to be there. And we learn more moment by moment. And as we go further into the evening, Sister Denise and Sister Joan will probably discuss just what this information
is. We'll look closely at it, Sue.
Great. And I really want to add that I think that idea...
We just ran out of time, Sue.
The peace idea is great.
All right. Thank you very much.
You.
Stay with us. We'll do it for the next 2 hours. I'm very perceptive of you. Glad to have you aboard. Vivienne, your magnificent work, The Heirs of the Gods, we wanted to talk about that a little bit, and then certainly we want to talk about one of the things that Like you said, it's beginning, Spectre. We can say that. And that is the Million Minutes of Peace, an international appeal. The power of thought. And we've talked a great deal about the power of thought on this show. And it is more powerful than the hydrogen explosion. We have Earl on the line. Earl, welcome aboard. I'm having trouble with these buttons again. Hello, Earl. All right, I'm here. Earl, are you there? I'm hitting one. I'm getting all this. Earl, you just hang in there, Will.
Just relax.
Earl, keep talking till we get you there. Everything is working here. Hello there, Gail. Can you turn up our pot here? Earl, are you there? Yeah, we'll press. We'll get to Earl. Earl, don't go away. We've just got a pot that's down. We'll get the pot up here in a minute. And talk about... But this is very interesting, what we heard from Sue just a minute ago. The affinity that the Mormons seem to have with the work and the heirs of the gods.
We've had a nice exchange with them whenever we've lectured.
Earl, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, right. We found you, Earl. Thank you very much.
I'll tell you why it's happening, Bill. You know, Mercury is retrograde.
It is in retrograde. And so is Mars. And both of them are really doing us in.
Oh, I didn't know about Mars. Okay.
But Mercury will be out in a couple of days.
Okay.
I'm ready.
This is the first time I've ever been able to get through, and I don't know how I did it, but you know Mercury does strange things.
Mm-hmm.
I have a quick comment and a question, Bill. My first comment is that... It sounds like you are onto something there in South America, and of course I'm looking forward to it with, as we used to say, bated breath in the old days.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the rushes, which I probably will see Tuesday or Wednesday.
Okay.
The first rushes, and I can't wait.
Yeah, it should be fascinating. The government, of course, I guess will deny that it exists.
No, actually, the government of Brazil, in one instance, is working very closely with the group.
I see.
The government of Brazil came under a great deal of criticism recently in São Paulo for scrambling their air force after these ping-pong balls, which, of course, if you've listened to the Pentagon, you know, or to Caltech, that those were just little pieces of swamp gas. But these little ping-pong ball swamp gas pieces did cause a legitimate air force to be scrambled, did cause aircraft to lose their electricity, their electrical circuits, almost created some disasters, and was witnessed by 150,000 people.
I have a question, Joe.
So the
mushy
brains at the Pentagon and Caltech can, you know, don't
why wasn't this, and this is a dumb question, of course, why hasn't this been reported in the, quote, press or any, I haven't heard anything, this is the first thing I've heard this evening.
Well, it was reported in the press, and in fact it was reported here on KABC, in one instance, tongue-in-cheek, and with some degree of seriousness from the network.
Mm-hmm.
It was also reported in the Los Angeles Times, the Daily News, and the Register, Associated Press, and UPI. And that happened on the very same day that the incident up at Petaluma happened, which got more attention simply because it was closer to home.
Okay.
However, the one in São Paulo involved hundreds of thousands of people.
When was that, Bill? Do you know the date?
It had to be about, 2 months ago or 6 weeks ago, something like that. I know the sighting up in Petaluma.
Okay. Well, you'll talk more about that. The other quick comment, and I'll let you go. There's other callers, I'm sure.
A few.
Yes. I have never heard the lady discuss her book or her ideas, so I'm sure that you'll get into that later on. And I'll be listening with both ears and be looking forward to whenever it comes out on TV. It should be fascinating.
We hope it is.
Keep up the good work, Bill. It's a pleasure talking.
Earl, thank you for your call. I appreciate that very much.
All right. Thanks.
All right. And Ben, you're on the line.
Hello, Bill. Congratulations on the film.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, listen, have you tried to use that same energy of all your viewers to maybe contact the people that are on that film for channeling some conversation back to you? Just a thought I had while I was sitting here.
Not really.
Might be an interesting experiment if those people get that energy up, you know, wherever they are and go, gosh, just call Bill and talk to him.
That doesn't seem to happen very much. They do use physics. In fact, we have some of the recorded conversations that they have given us. In fact, we played them on the air one night.
think massive...
This is the group from Coldus. They gave that, and maybe I'll play that again for you.
Massive thrust of energy, you know, of thought toward these beings. They may respond to that, you know, maybe just something no one's tried yet.
It's a very difficult thing when you're dealing with these people, and there are so many different ones of them. Now, Vivian's work, she was talking about a particular group of people who came here from Arcturus.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there are many.
Oh, God, yes.
And some of them are from what are one of the most interesting groups is the group from Uma, which they call themselves an alternate universe to us, but they can make that transition. But they are very real, and they are very, very much here.
I'd like to ask Vivian about something that happened to me during some regressions that I had when I was having people work on me doing past life stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it came up that as an animal and a couple of times as a human around the world, I was tagged by the saucers. And when the lady put me into the future and another person put me into the future, at both times it came across that I was tagged and I was going to be picked up and taken back to the Pleiades, which happens to be a prominent factor.
Pleiades?
It's a very interesting place. That group has been very active here for 40,000 years.
When did you have this experience?
Oh, about 6 months ago.
Continue.
Well, during the regression, it became very clear as I went toward the future. She was asking me to, you know, get the imagery so we could determine where I was. And I was off the Northern California. And all of a sudden, I was on a spaceship on the way to the Pleiades. And it seemed so complete. You know? And someone else had done a progression on me, a whole different type of person. And the same thing came up. And that I'd been tagged along. Tagged and metered. Tagged and metered was the phrase while I was in deep trance. And it's kind of fascinating. I was wondering whether that had come up for you at all.
Earl, before you are Earl, right? No, you're Ben.
Call me Ben.
Before this happened, did you know anything about the relationship between Earth people and the people of Pleiades?
Yes, I did know something about it. That's, I did, yes.
Mm-hmm. I ask that because sometimes our imaginations can run wild.
Exactly, but the lady that does these regressions is really no amateur at all, and there's a whole specific section that we work on so you can distinguish imagination from memory. And these were memories.
Well, this is interesting. Our work centered in terms of the of Maseroth, Arcturus, the Pleiades, and Orion. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Sure. Hey, God bless you both.
The Pleiades has always played a very important mm-hmm. role in the affairs of our history, of the Western world as we understand it. That goes all the way back into antiquity. And Orion.
The Pleiades in India are described as the seven rishis, which are the seven wisest people that there ever were.
Mm-hmm.
And they are kind of projected out into the sky as those particular stars. But they refer originally to actual human intellects who knew many, many things.
Well, the pyramids themselves and Machu Picchu and some of the ancient ruins are standing tributes to Pleiades.
Absolutely.
The way they are constructed and the way they are designed. And there is a magnificent story that comes from the lore of Peru. I'll just share this with you. It goes back into their oral history. That the people who lived in the upper reaches of the Andes in what is now Peru were being attacked by the people from the lowlands. And the men of fire who came down from Pleiades told them to plant this plant below. And they did. And, of course, the advancing armies then harvested the plant and cooked the plant, the leaves of the plant, and they all died. And they then were told by the men of fire from Pleiades to take the root of the plant and feed it to their families, which they did do, and it was very beneficial to them. Many centuries later, the Spaniards came over and took the root of that plant with them back to Europe. And because they started growing that plant in Europe, they were able to increase the acre fold of their agricultural productivity by 100%. 100-fold, actually. Because that plant was the potato.
Sister Anisa just said probably the potato.
It was the potato. And had it not been for the potato, we probably would not have had the Industrial Age. And it was indigenous to Peru, and the Peruvian lore says that it came from Pleiades. I just thought I would share.
That's wonderful story. Yes.
All right, Shell, you're on.
Hello, and it's good to be with you. We called twice and got disconnected once by our own error, and apparently It has meant that we get through to you tonight.
Well, you're with us now. Good evening.
The other errors have been my fingers.
No, no, this was my doing. At any rate, we're certainly very interested in both of the side subjects today of the Million Minutes of Peace, and we will be very interested in, we certainly hope that the material you have on videotape will be publicized well enough that it will be accessible.
I assure you, you will get to see it.
Because, Bill, you live in a world of tape recorders and VCRs, and these things have a way of getting around once they're on the air once.
That's where it's targeted, is for your VCR.
Okay.
We're not going to even try to go through the bureaucracy of a network.
Okay.
To put this out, because, you know, it just will not be as important as to what Lee Iacocca is doing. So, yeah.
So we certainly hope that this is well publicized.
We'll do our best.
We'll keep our eyes open in the Bodhi tree and those places. We're also looking for heirs of the gods, and perhaps someone can give us some clues a little later where that's available.
Not right now.
Well, you just said the Bodhi tree. Why don't you go over there, and I think you will find some copies there.
I think Alexandria, too, has it, too.
Yes, and then for those friends that are in Long Beach, the Pegasus.
Mm-hmm.
And,
great new story down there, right?
Isn't it? Yes,
yes.
Very nice. And then Organicville.
Organic.
Has on third, Organicville. It's a health food.
They're
in many, many of the metaphysical stores. Those that are left, and they'd best hurry down.
It is must reading.
I would like to leave with you with a little experience of mine, and perhaps leave an avenue open for some commentary, and then I'll clear the air. Okay. Many of us, you know, easily remember, and a lot of us can easily recall, and I don't want to get into a situation of needing to verify memories or experiences or regressions, but it seems to me that there are an awful lot of us around here now who recall what we've been through before so many times. Myself, I know I can recall a couple of instances, one spontaneously and one with some help. And I wonder if the state of the world and people with these memories today are an indication of a natural progression back to a situation of remembering and of undoing what looks like the terrible mess we've created, which may not really be such a terrible mess. It may be part of the plan.
It's a part of the evolutionary process.
Plan. Bit of a mess right now, but it is part of the plan, and it's going to be cleaned up momentarily, and that's...
There's only one way to learn determination and will, and that is to get into a mess and be determined to undo it.
And on that note, I'll get off here and say only that I hope I do hear a little bit more this evening about the Million Minutes of Peace.
In the 11 o'clock hour, I do want Sister Denise and Joan Derry to get into that very, very deeply so that you can share with it. But I wanted to build this up to you and let you know that this is not just a fanciful idea that happened from a lot of people who had a lot of ideas that said, oh, let's have good thoughts about world peace.
No, this has been going on for thousands of years, and I think a lot of us know that.
Yes.
This knowledge, and I'll get off the air, let someone else have a chance, and keep my ears open. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you for your call.
Thank you
good
very
night.
Much for your comments, Shell. Appreciate those. All right, Janet, you're on.
Yes, hi. I'd like to ask, well, I changed my question a little bit so it would be a little more appropriate for the show, but what I was wondering, first of all, was that you mentioned something about a great gathering up.
Yes.
Yeah, what did you mean by that? You never finished what you were saying.
Oh, well, it was had a period at the end of it, a great gathering up and gathering in terms of the escalation of what's about to happen on the planet.
Oh, I thought you meant maybe people being taken off the planet. You know?
That too. Yes. Yeah. Yes. We'll get very much into that.
The Bible does speak of that. Well, you know, I'm a Christian, and the Bible, there are some Christians that believe there will be what they call
harpozo. The Greek word there, in the Greek word for that is harpozo. They will be caught up.
Yeah.
Some of the Christians call that the rapture, but and then the second coming.
Right. Certain Christians that believe that.
Yes, we're talking about the same thing, but it's just a matter of semantics.
Yes. If you were to read the literature that comes from the contactees of Pleiades, they call it the harvest.
Yes, yes,
right.
Yes.
And that's imminent unless we change our ways,
right.
And they are pragmatic about it, and they don't think
well,
we're going to.
I agree with you on all of this. The only question I have is that how can you interweave all of this extraterrestrial and weird stuff in with the beautiful teaching of the pure biblical teaching? I mean, why do we have to mix it up with all of this? With this other stuff, can't we just accept what the Bible says? And
well, that's what we're talking about doing, Janet.
Right.
First of all, you remember the Bible seems to be written
up. But it also warns us that there are false. I mean, if you can accept the parts that you're talking about now, it warns of false teachers and false. Jesus told us that there would be false Christ that would have great signs and wonders, and they would be able to deceive even the elect if it were possible.
Oh, yes. I'm very familiar with that. Jesus also makes a statement saying that I am not from this world. I am from above. You are from beneath. And when we say extraterrestrial, we can refer to Paul. There are terrestrial and celestial. And I think what you're concerned about here, if I just simply said, well, God and the angels, they're in heaven. If I use the word heaven, then that makes you more comfortable, you see. Yes, it's a matter of semantics. And if you will read, what was your name again?
Janet.
Janet, if you will read Psalms 103, 104, because we're told to search the scriptures for in them.
Right.
Yes, you will have eternal life. And if you will read Psalms 103, 104, I think that you will see there when it speaks of the heavenly hosts, I think that, and if you were to look up the etymology in concordance, you would find that it's talking about beings. Where do you think God and the angels are? Do you think they're where you call heaven, don't you?
I believe it's a place called heaven. I don't really have an image of it.
That's off this planet to you, isn't it?
Pardon?
Is that off this planet? Is that off?
Yes,
that would be extraterrestrial,
right.
Wouldn't it?
Yes.
Thank you so much for your call.
All right.
Yeah, there's one little thought that I would like to add in that. Because sometimes if you say a terrestrial, you can also say a worldly person. And if you say an angel, you can be speaking about a person who is deeply pure.
Yes.
And there are people on this planet who are very worldly, and there are also people on this planet who are very different from worldliness. And if you start looking at those kinds of ideas, then you can see that we're not necessarily talking about something weird. We're talking about different
yes.
predispositions in existing people
yes.
in the world today. And we can decide whether we are going to be a worldly person or whether we're going to do something of a different order.
To take on the nature, character, and personality of the celestials.
Exactly, yes.
Janet had an interesting question that she originally was going to ask, and that was about the tree of knowledge.
Ah.
And the temptation of Satan,
uh-huh.
and how you unfolded that in the Heirs of the Gods was an enormously dramatic moment. Do you want to just encapsulate that for us?
Janice, where do you live? Do you live in the Los Angeles area?
I think she's already gone off.
Oh, she's gone. Yeah. She's probably. Rephrase that again, because it's such a vast. I want to encapsulate
the tree of knowledge of good and evil.
Yes.
And the temptation that I guess was given to Eve.
Well, here we have, again, a wonderful story. And there's a lot of myths.
It'll be a great part of it.